Hey, Jared. I like you.
Wanna go get some swan meat later?
What?
No way!
I'll have to just keep trying.
And scene.
And that was a dramatic reading of a scene that made just about as much sense in context from the film we watched today on Banquet at the Fun Dumpster.
How drab, how dull critique can be. It's begging and pleading for apathy. The good, the bad, the in-between. And nothing is everyone's cup of tea. No time to waste, there's things to do. Jared and Eric are happy too. They'll suffer the worst of films for you. So enter the strangest of banquet rooms.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone.
And welcome to Banquet at the Flum Dumpster.
That's us. We're in a dumpster, and we're having a banquet.
Yum, yum.
Yummity, yummity.
Today, we're venturing.
We're venturing into some new territory for us.
Yeah. Yeah, well, not entirely new necessarily for both of us, but new to us watching these movies together. Like, yes. I've watched movies from China before.
Uh-huh.
I'm guessing you probably might have too.
I'm pretty sure I have. I'm sure that I have. I just can't think of any off the top of my head.
But we've never sat down and said, let's watch a bad Chinese movie.
Yes. I have heard anecdotally that the Chinese film industry does produce some products that lend themselves well to ironic viewing. But I don't think that we've ever ventured into that realm in this context ourselves.
Yeah. No, I don't think we have. And it's, I think that's what makes me really excited about this, is to see how stylistically
mm-hmm.
this differs from a lot of the movies we see. Because I expect it's going to be different.
Yeah.
I expect there's going to be some very noticeable elements that we're going to want to talk about. Like just elements that you wouldn't see in a North American or like a European film, like a bad film. You know?
Yeah. From what I've seen of the Chinese film industry, it does look like in places it takes, you know, a lot of the worst impulses from the American film industry and like dials them up to 11.
Yeah. And that's what I want. I want something. Uh-huh. Like, I'm not looking for a flum here. I am looking for something amazing.
As
you
am
know,
I.
We're often looking for flums here. Today, I want to be amazed.
I also want to be blown away.
I also want to read, because when I was looking at, we both found this independently, uh-huh. which I think is amazing. And this is one that's fully on YouTube, but the IMDb description, I'm just going to read it out because it gives you nothing. I have no idea what the plot of this is, because this is the IMDb description.
I'm so excited.
Pure Hearts into Chinese Showbiz, that's what we're watching, by the way, is the maiden work of PhD Bi Zhefei, I think is how it's pronounced.
PhD, a 36-year-old. Hang on. PhD as in, like, he has a doctorate?
Yes, as in doctor.
Oh, my God.
A 36-year-old director. It took him several years to write the screenplay and to produce the movie. This is an unprecedented work where a bold decision was made to star 17 students learning in the acting department of 8 the most prestigious arts academies in China.
Oh, my goodness.
The movie portrays the unforgettable pleasures and sorrows among a kind and earnest acting instructor and his 17 good-looking students after entering the showbiz during their 4 years of college. I both know nothing about the movie now, and I know everything about the movie
Yeah,
now.
I feel the same way. I feel like I don't know what I'm walking into even less than I did before, but I also feel like I know way too much.
Yes. I'm excited. I'm excited for this.
Is this
better not disappoint us?
Is this my future? Is this what my life will look like after I complete my PhD?
This, I think that after this, you are going to want to reconsider your whole career decision and maybe train, like, maybe have this be your advisor. Go find him.
Wow.
Because if you're going to get a doctor to teach you how to doctor.
I don't know if I have very much else to say about this. I remember hearing that this was like an essential film for me to watch, but to be perfectly honest, I don't remember why. And I'd like to preserve that.
Yeah. I'm very excited. I've heard that like this, all I really know is that this kind of is notorious
in, yeah,
and outside of China.
Yeah.
And so that's, yeah, it's got a lovely, you know, it has a star on IMDb. It's got a star, so.
It has a star. You mean
one? It's a 1.0.
Well, that is a star.
Yeah, it's got a star on the website where the lowest you can give it is one star.
Oh my goodness! This is going to be
something.
Let's get to it. Okay.
We will see you after this musical break.
Remain on the edge of your seat. In a moment, your hosts will return with the fruits of their suffering. Every last thought that is currently buffering to. The time has arrived. Their opinions will now debut.
Well, that was sublime. I don't think I have ever seen a movie move that quickly and do so little at the same time.
Yeah. I feel like we just watched the Chinese version of The Room. Not plot-wise, just this is The Room from China.
Just like, I don't even know how to comprehend what I just watched. The Room has so much more of a cohesive narrative than this did.
Yeah.
I'm baffled. I don't know. I don't know what to make of this movie yet.
Okay, so for people who haven't seen this movie, I'll just say broadly because there is maybe like 40 different plots in this movie, so we're not going to get into
so
everything.
So many characters.
There were
so many characters. Why? Yeah. Why were there this many characters? I don't understand.
So there was, I think, like 17 students and the one teacher, who each seem to have their own plot line going on, and the major overarching thing here is that they're like this acting class at a college, taught by this one instructor who cares so deeply about them,
so deeply.
All of the students make these terrible decisions, and he keeps trying to get them interviews with producers and stuff, including a guy who holds milk.
Oh my God! No,
scene
don't.
Very
don't.
Weirdly,
that was my favorite scene in the. I mean, that the first part of that was my favorite scene in the movie.
Yes, I was
after
say,
that, it went downhill very quickly.
Well, a lot of those scenes, though, they all seemed to like there were like six scenes where a producer like acts indecently, as they called it, but essentially like sexually harasses or assaults one of the students. And then there was the one scene where one of the students is just like, you know what, I'm gonna do this.
Oh my
and
God.
The guy's like, what, how, why would you even think that was something you should
God.
Do and it's something
I mean I guess I do have to say that I have objectively just watched something.
Yeah. But the reason why I say this is the Chinese The Room is not because like it has any real stylistic or plot comparisons, but just in the fact that you can see that this director slash writer slash star slash
editor?
Production designer slash editor slash music department, this guy cared about this movie. This guy cared so hard. He wanted this to work, and it didn't. And it's because he did every role on set. Like,
there was that one scene that you pointed to, and said like it feels like I remember you said that it felt like the director, writer,
yeah,
actor and composer all had a very different thing that they wanted to get across in that scene, and none of those things were compatible, but the director, writer, actor, editor, and composer were all the same person.
Yeah, there was one scene, it was like this guy, he runs into the ocean in like, it looks like the actor himself was running and trying to run in slow motion. And of course, this is the actor who is also the director. And he runs into the ocean. And then the editor speeds up his run into the ocean in this comedic way. Like, it makes him look like
While he's reading a dramatic poem or something. Or was it was it a song? It was a song.
But it was like this dramatic slow ballad.
It was like this prime brooding moment that was sped up by the editing into this like weirdly comical. And like there are so many moments of that are just so awkward.
Yeah, there was like another one though where like it also felt like that was there is this guy who is working on set as like a set crew member, mm-hmm. and he's talking to the director, and at random points in the conversation, they just speed up, like the editor is just like speeds up what they're
the
saying.
Dialogue into and like chipmunk like the, speak. Like,
yeah, it's the chipmunk speed where it's like, and I'm like, I have subtitles. Was that understandable to somebody who didn't have subtitles in Chinese? Like, there were so many of these choices that you have to admire that somebody like took a look at this like what was, I guess, a script 7 years in the making.
That's true, isn't it?
Well, it's weird because like I want to stress this doesn't feel like another way that's like The Room. This doesn't feel like it didn't have a budget. Like this doesn't feel like somebody went into their backyard and made a movie. Mm-hmm. Like this feels like somebody spent a lot of money on this movie.
Yeah.
And it's so weird. Like the scenes move at this pace that is just incredible. And by incredible, I mean like I don't think that it's believable if we told you the pace that it went at.
I still can't comprehend the pace because the pacing of this movie, because it baffles me. Like there were so many different plot threads running simultaneously, and every single time a new scene would show up that would introduce a new idea, spend like 30 to 120 seconds on that idea, and then switch to a completely different set of characters in a completely new plot line in a way that didn't leave me expecting that first scene to come back at all. And then like half an hour later, we'd return back to those same characters. The movie would present them in a way that like expected me to remember who they were. And just like pick up from their same stories. And it's the type of thing where, like, if this movie just narrowed that down to, like, one set of characters, or, like, three even, max, if you wanted to, like, have that anthology format, it would have worked, but that's better. Not... It would have worked slightly better, but that's also not what the movie was trying to do, I don't think. I think it wanted to tell this very wide-reaching story about this group of people that only slightly interacts with each other.
Yeah. It also, I think we need to specify that the edits, they didn't have some kind of, like, transition between the scenes to make it very clear we had moved on.
Mm-hmm.
It was shot like we would cut and it seemed like we were in a different cut of the same scene, and you would expect those same two characters you were just with to walk in, but it was different characters because they were cut off mid conversation.
And it's again, like, so many of these stories paralleled each other in really repetitive ways that I do wonder if it was necessary to have, what did you say it was, 17 different characters?
Something like that. And I also think that there is a lot of footage that wasn't used in this movie.
I definitely get that sense.
I think that this was like, they shot 6 hours that was all scripted, and all of these scenes were meant to last a normal scene length. But he was like, oh no, like, nobody's going to play my 6-hour movie. So he cut it down to 1.5 hours.
Do you know what that means, Eric? That means that we need to start a movement. We need petitions. We need social media activism. I want a Snyder cut of Pure Hearts into Chinese Showbiz. I want to watch the 6-hour version of this movie.
Yeah. I mean, the 25th, it's almost the same age. I guess this was 2015. It's been just about the amount of time.
Yeah.
As the Snyder Cut.
It's time.
Yeah.
It's time. I want the 6-hour cut of Pure Hearts into Chinese Showbiz. I want to develop the relationship to these characters that the movie wants me to develop with them. Because
we don't know that it's not out there already. We haven't done a lot of research about it.
I love how the running gag of this podcast has just become, we don't do any research. We just talk about these movies after watching them the first time.
Yeah. I mean, we do like a minimal amount sometimes.
We read the IMDb summary. If
occasionally
we feel like
IMDb
it.
Reviews. I do want to say there are some IMDb reviews out there that say, you know, this is the worst movie on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, it's a fair assessment. I think it's up there.
It's definitely up there. It's definitely like dramatically unwatchable. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a movie that was this fast paced and also made me want to fall asleep as well.
Yeah. But I want to say, though, it's unwatchable in a way that a lot of the movies that we watch are not. Like,
yeah.
There are movies where we say, this is unwatchable because it's so slow and trotting and boring.
Mm-hmm.
This is unwatchable because the pacing is exhausting.
And like, I feel like it's also more interesting than some of the movies that we've watched that are unwatchable because they're slow. I'm trying to name one off the top of my head that I know we've covered on this podcast so far, but I can't think of it.
Well, just like looking at like classic example, like Mano's Hands of Fate is often looked at as being like a terrible, unwatchable movie. And it is. It is slow. It is boring. You're like, oh my God, I need the Mystery Science Theater commentary
out
over
your
here.
Eyes. By like 15 minutes in. And this one also had me clawing out my eyes, but there was something about it that feels more interesting than Mano's Hands of Fate. Do you get that?
It is.
Like,
yeah,
I don't know
I think...
what it is about it, but I feel like there's more meat to this. Because this is a film that has something to say. even if it says that something in a very like surreal and mixed up sort of way.
Yeah, it has a point that it keeps making over and over and over again. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like it has something that it wants to say about the Chinese film industry. It has something that it wants to say about like sexual abuse and casting couch practices. It has things that it wants to say about like these characters and like even the like self-insert character of the teacher as the director as the teacher, who it feels like he's communicating that he deeply, deeply cares about his students and would enter into a poorly edited car chase sequence to rescue one of them from a creepy producer. And there's something kind of touching about that.
Yeah. No, I really, that's why I keep coming back to this comparison, because there is that earnestness of somebody really, really caring enough to make this movie and to spend a lot of money on this movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's so evident, and it makes it so interesting. And I love a movie that does that. I didn't love this movie, but I love movies that do that.
And that's the comparison that you're making to The Room, to clarify for our listeners.
Yeah. Because there's like the Room is clearly a passion project.
Uh-huh.
And this is in the same ways.
At the same time, though, this is less watchable than The Room.
Well, it's less watchable in an ironic way.
Yeah. Yes. It's the type of thing that because so much happens in such a short span of time, it is exhausting. I feel like I need I feel like I need three times my normal brain capacity just to follow this movie minute to minute.
Now, do you think, though, that if we spoke the language, it would be less exhausting?
I don't think so. I think that having to read subtitles, especially because the subtitles on the particular version that we watched were very small print, that does make it more difficult. But there was also that one scene where the characters spoke English, and it was no better.
No. No, I'm just thinking that, like, we should acknowledge that, you know, not speaking the language, we do, like, there is that added element. Mm-hmm. I don't think it contributed that much, but it might have contributed a little.
Yeah,
just
you have
acknowledging
a point.
That.
You have
just
a point.
Acknowledging that, because we don't often go for non-English films.
We should go for more of those, shouldn't we?
This is a really, like, I want to see more. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not from this director. I don't think there is more from this director.
But I think that the Chinese film industry is something that I definitely want to explore in more detail. So, dear listener, if you have any recommendations of iconic pieces of horrible, horrible Chinese cinema or anything, any other like horrible, horrible transnational film, please suggest it.
Please.
I don't know what. How are we going to have our listeners
tweet it
talk
to at Jarrett Aronoff?
Yes, tweet it at me. Tweet your bad movie recommendations at me. And oh, geez.
Yeah,
we'll see.
I also just before we wrap up, I want to comment on. You already said what your favorite scene was. My favorite scene was where. You just have these two characters going about their regular, like, business in the foreground of the scene. And then you see this old woman walking into the frame behind them, just walking around, like, doing her morning exercises. And then out of nowhere, a truck just pulls around the corner. And this guy has to, like, throw himself in front of the truck to save this old woman. And then it just, there's like blood hits the screen. And you just see the guy like under the truck screaming. And you're like,
it comes out of nowhere.
It came out of nowhere. we go to the hospital. We go to the hospital for a few seconds. That guy's basically out of the movie. And you're like, that came out of nowhere, and we're just moving along.
And we just move along.
And like scenes like that just made this so exceptional. In like that, there was also that one scene in terms of the like, to clarify, this is a very different non-violent scene, if anybody was offended by my description of that violence. This is a scene where somebody just walks into a dorm room. We've just cut into this dorm room. There, we haven't seen any of the conversation. But some character who we've never seen before walks in with a giant stuffed animal and says, look, I got this stuffed animal. Walks out of the room. Somebody says, that's my cousin, or something like that. And then we never see that character again.
I have to say, that entire scene did not register in my brain. I genuinely have no idea what moment in the movie you're talking about.
It might not register because it was 10 seconds that we cut in and out of a scene that was in a setting we never saw again, with characters we never saw again. And that just reinforces my belief that there is a long, long cut of this film where that character, that setting, and that, like, that whole plot got really fleshed out. It just didn't, that was the only part that was remaining in the actual feature.
Please, world, please release the Snyder cut of Pure Hearts into Chinese showbiz. I will fall asleep while watching it, but I want to see what it looks like. So with that said, Eric, what do you think we've learned today?
I think we've learned a lot about what happens when an auteur devotes his life to telling a story that nobody wants to watch.
But what if that one story was actually 17 stories in one 97-minute film?
That was originally, like, 700 minutes. Yeah.
We are making that assumption,
It's a very fair assumption. Like, I think it has to be.
If it's not true, I want it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't do research
here. Well, with that said, that has been Pure Hearts into Chinese Showbiz. I have been Jared Aronoff. You can find me on Twitter at Jared Aronoff. Please tweet me your worst movie recommendations, English or otherwise.
And I've been Eric Tisch. You can find me producing my own masterwork that I will be writing, directing, acting, editing, music, everything.
Please don't.
At some point.
Our theme song was composed and performed by the one and only Tarquin Alexandra. You can also find her on Twitter at Tark Alexandra. That's T-A-R-Q Alexandra. And you can stream her latest EP, A Tyrant's Demise, on Spotify, Apple, or any other music platform of your choice. And then in the meantime, hope you boat.
If the concept were to exist, that I'm to explain, which it doesn't. In hypothetical terms, every form of art has a bucket, a container to categorize the format and style, the greats and the rotten. The podcast that you've just consumed did the work for you by scraping the bottom.